But you're all dressed up. Why, you look almost like a penguin yourself.
Mr. Popper had smoothed down his hair and shaved off his whiskers. Never again would Mrs. Popper have to reproach him for looking as wild as a lion. He had put on a white shirt with a white tie and white flannel trousers and a pair of bright tan oxblood shoes. He had got out of the cedar chest his old black evening tailcoat that he had been married in and brushed it carefully and put it on, too. He did indeed look a little like a penguin. He turned and strutted like one now for Mrs. Popper. But he did not forget his duty to Captain Cook.
"Can I have a few yards of clothesline, please, Mama?" asked Mr. Popper.
Chapter 8 Penguin's Promenade. Mr. Popper soon found that it was not so easy to take a penguin for a stroll. Captain Cook did not care at first for the idea of being put on a leash. However, Mr. Popper was firm. He tied one end of the clothesline to the penguin's fat throat and the other to his own wrist.
"Ark!"
said Captain Cook indignantly. Still, he was a very reasonable sort of bird, and when he saw that protesting did him no good, he recovered his customary dignity and decided to let Mr. Popper lead him. Mr. Popper put on his best Sunday derby and opened the front door with Captain Cook waddling graciously behind him.
"Gaw!"
said the penguin, stopping at the edge of the porch to look down at the steps. Mr. Popper gave him plenty of clothesline leash.
"Gurk!"
said Captain Cook, and raising his flippers, he leaned forward bravely and tobogganed down the steps on his stomach. Mr. Popper followed, though not in the same way. Captain Cook quickly got up on his feet again and strutted to the street ahead of Mr. Popper with many quick turns of his head and pleased comments on the new scene. Down Proudfoot Avenue came a neighbor of the Poppers, Mrs. Callahan, with her arms full of groceries. She stared in astonishment when she saw Captain Cook and Mr. Popper looking like a larger penguin himself in his black tailcoat.
"Heavens have mercy on us!" she exclaimed as the bird began to investigate the striped stockings under her house dress. "It isn't an owl, and it isn't a goose!"
"It isn't," said Mr. Popper, tipping his Sunday derby. "It's an Antarctic penguin, Mrs. Callahan."
"Get away from me," said Mrs. Callahan to Captain Cook. "An anteater, is it?"
"Not anteater," explained Mr. Popper. "Antarctic. It was sent to me from the South Pole."
"Take your South Pole goose away from me at once," said Mrs. Callahan.
Mr. Popper pulled obediently at the clothesline while Captain Cook took a parting peck at Mrs. Callahan's striped stockings.
"Heaven preserve us," said Mrs. Callahan. "I must stop in and see Mrs. Popper at once. I would never have believed it. I will be going now."
"So will I," said Mr. Popper, as Captain Cook dragged him off down the street. Their next stop was at the drugstore at the corner of Proudfoot Avenue and Main Street. Here, Captain Cook insisted on looking over the window display, which consisted of several open packages of shiny white boric crystals. These he evidently mistook for polar snow, for he began to peck at the window vigorously. Suddenly, a car wheeled to the nearby curb with a shriek of its brakes, and two young men sprang out, one of them bearing a camera.
"This must be it," said the first young man to the other.
"It's them, all right," said the second young man.
The cameraman set up his tripod on the sidewalk. By this time, a small crowd had gathered around, and two men in white coats had even come out of the drugstore to watch. Captain Cook, however, was still too much interested in the window exhibits to bother to turn around.
"You're Mr. Popper of 432 Proudfoot Avenue, aren't you?"
asked the second young man, pulling a notebook out of his pocket.
Yes, said Mr. Popper, realizing that his picture was about to be taken for the newspaper. The two young men had, as a matter of fact, heard about the strange bird from the policeman, and had been on their way to the Popper house to get an interview when they saw Captain Cook.
Hey, Pelican, turn around and see the pretty birdie, said the photographer.
That's no pelican, said the other, who was a reporter. Pelicans have a pouch in their bills.
I'd think it was a dodo, only dodos are extinct. This will make an elegant picture if I can ever get her to turn around.
It's a penguin, said Mr. Popper proudly. Its name is Captain Cook.
Cook?
Said the penguin, turning around, now that they were talking about him. Spying the camera tripod, he walked over and examined it.
Probably thinks it's a three-legged stork, said the photographer.
This bird of yours, said the reporter. Is it a he or a she? The public will want to know. Mr. Popper hesitated.
Well, I call it Captain Cook.
That makes it a he, said the reporter, writing rapidly in his notebook. Still curious, Captain Cook started walking round and round the tripod, till the clothesline, the penguin, Mr. Popper, and the tripod were all tangled up. At the advice of one of the bystanders, the tangle was finally straightened out by Mr. Popper's walking around the tripod three times in the opposite direction. At last, Captain Cook, standing still beside Mr. Popper, consented to pose. Mr. Popper straightened his tie, and the cameraman snapped the picture. Captain Cook shut his eyes, and this is the way his picture appeared later in all the newspapers. One last question, said the reporter. Where did you get your strange pet?
From Admiral Drake, the South Pole explorer. He sent him to me for a present.
Yeah, said the reporter. Anyway, it's a good story.
The two young men jumped into their car. Mr. Popper and Captain Cook continued their walk, with quite a crowd following and asking questions. The crowd was getting so thick that in order to escape, Mr. Popper led Captain Cook into a barber shop. The man who kept the barber shop had, up to this time, been a very good friend of Mr. Popper's. Chapter 9. In the Barber Shop. It was very quiet in the barber shop. The barber was shaving an elderly gentleman. Captain Cook found this spectacle very interesting, and in order to get a better view, he jumped up on the mirror ledge.
"Good night," said the barber.
The gentleman in the barber's chair, his face already white with lather, half tilted his head to see what had happened.
"Gurk,"
said the penguin, flapping his flippers and reaching out its long beak toward the lather on the gentleman's face. With a yell and a leap, the gentleman rose from his reclining position, left the barber's chair, and fled into the street, not even stopping for his coat and hat.
"Gah!"
said Captain.
"Hey," said the barber to Mr. Popper, "take that thing out of my shop. This is no zoo. What's the idea?"
"Do you mind if I take him out your back door?" asked Mr. Popper.
"Any door," said the barber, "as long as it's quick. Now it's biting the teeth off my combs."
Mr. Popper took Captain Cook in his arms, and amid cries of
"Quark, Gawk, and Ark,"
made his way out of the shop and its back door, and out a door into an alley. Captain Cook now discovered his first back stairway. Mr. Popper discovered that when a penguin has found steps going up somewhere, it is absolutely impossible to keep him from climbing them.
"All right," said Mr. Popper, panting up the steps behind Captain Cook. "I suppose being a bird, and one that can't fly, you have to go up in the air somehow, so you like to climb stairs. Well, it's a good thing this building has only three stories. Come on, let's see what you can do."
Slowly but unwearyingly, Captain Cook lifted one pink foot after another from one step to the next, followed by Mr. Popper at the other end of the clothesline. At last they came to the top landing. "Now what?" inquired Mr. Popper of Captain Cook. Finding there were no more steps to climb, Captain Cook turned around and surveyed the steps that now went down. Then he raised his flippers and leaned forward. Mr. Popper, who was still panting for breath, had not supposed the determined bird would plunge so quickly. He should have remembered that penguins will toboggan whenever they get a chance. Perhaps he had been unwise in tying one end of the clothesline to his own wrist. At any rate, this time Mr. Popper found himself suddenly sliding on his own white-clad stomach down the three flights of steps. This delighted the penguin, who was enjoying his own slide just ahead of Mr. Popper. When they reached the bottom, Captain Cook was so eager to go up again that Mr. Popper had to call a taxi to distract him. 432 Proudfoot Avenue, said Mr. Popper to the driver. The driver, who was a kind and polite man, did not laugh at his oddly assorted passengers until he had been paid.
"Oh, dear," said Mrs. Popper when she opened the door to her husband. "You looked so neat and handsome when you started for your walk. And now look at the front of you."
"I am sorry, my love," said Mr. Popper in a humble tone, "but you can't always tell what a penguin will do next."
So saying, he went to lie down, for he was quite exhausted from all the unusual exercise, while Captain Cook had a shower and took a nap in the icebox. Chapter 10 Shadows. Next day, the picture of Mr. Popper and Captain Cook appeared in the Stillwater Morning Chronicle, with a paragraph about the house painter who had received a penguin by air express from Admiral Drake in the faraway Antarctic. Then the Associated Press picked up the story, and a week later the photograph, in rotogravure, could be seen in the Sunday edition of the most important newspapers in all the large cities in the country. Naturally, the Poppers all felt very proud and happy. Captain Cook was not happy, however. He had suddenly ceased his gay, exploring little walks about the house, and would sit most of the day sulking in the refrigerator. Mrs. Popper had removed all the stranger objects, leaving only the marbles and checkers, so that Captain Cook now had a nice, orderly little rookery.
"He won't play with us anymore," said Bill. "I tried to get some of my marbles from him, and he tried to bite me."
"Naughty Captain Cook," said Janie.
"Better leave him alone, children," said Mrs. Popper. "He feels mopey, I guess."
But it was soon clear that it was something worse than mopiness that ailed Captain Cook. All day, he would sit with his little white-circled eyes staring out sadly from the refrigerator. His coat had lost its lovely glossy look. His round little stomach grew flatter every day. He would turn away now when Mrs. Popper would offer him some canned shrimps. One evening, she took his temperature. It was 104 degrees.
"Well, Papa," she said, "I think you had better call the veterinary doctor. I am afraid Captain Cook is really ill."
But when the veterinary came, he only shook his head. He was a very good animal doctor, and though he had never taken care of a penguin before, he knew enough about birds to see at a glance that this one was seriously ill.
"I will leave you some pills. Give him one every hour. Then you can try feeding him on sherbet and wrapping him in ice packs. But I cannot give you any encouragement because I am afraid it is a hopeless case. This kind of bird was never made for this climate, you know. I can see that you have taken good care of him, but an Antarctic penguin can't thrive in still water.
That night, the Poppers sat up all night, taking turns changing the ice packs. It was no use. In the morning, Mrs. Popper took Captain Cook's temperature again. It had gone up to 105. Everyone was very sympathetic. The reporter on the Morning Chronicle stopped in to inquire about the penguin. The neighbors brought in all sorts of broths and jellies to try to tempt the little fellow. Even Mrs. Callahan, who had never had a very high opinion of Captain Cook, made a lovely frozen custard for him. Nothing did any good. Captain Cook was too far gone. He slept all day now in a heavy stupor, and everyone was saying that the end was not far away. All of the Poppers had grown terribly fond of the funny, solemn little chap, and Mr. Popper's heart was frozen with terror. It seemed to him that his life would be very empty if Captain Cook went away. Surely someone would know what to do for a sick penguin. He wished that there were some way of asking advice of Admiral Drake away down at the South Pole, but there was not time. In his despair, Mr. Popper had an idea. A letter had brought him his pet. He sat down and wrote another letter. It was addressed to Dr. Smith, the curator of the Great Aquarium in Mammoth City, the largest in the world. Surely if anyone anywhere had any idea what could cure a dying penguin, this man would. 2 days later, there was an answer from the curator. Unfortunately, he wrote, it is not easy to cure a sick penguin. Perhaps you do not know that we too have, in our aquarium at Mammoth City, a penguin from the Antarctic. It is failing rapidly, in spite of everything we have done for it. I have wondered lately whether it is not suffering from loneliness. Perhaps that is what ails your Captain Cook. I am therefore shipping you, under separate cover, our penguin. You may keep her. There is just a chance that the two birds may get on better together. And that is how Greta came to live at 432 Proudfoot Avenue. Chapter 11. Greta. So Captain Cook did not die after all. There were two penguins in the refrigerator, one standing and one sitting on the nest under the ice cubes.
They're as like as two peas, said Mrs. Popper.
As two penguins, you mean? Answered Mr. Popper.
Yes, but which is which?
At this moment, the standing penguin jumped out of the icebox, reached inside, and took one of the checkers from under the sitting penguin, whose eyes were closed in sleep, and laid it at Mr. Popper's feet.
See, Mama, he's thanking me, said Mr. Popper, patting the penguin. At the South Pole, that's the way a penguin shows its friendship. Only it uses a stone instead of a checker. This one must be Captain Cook, and he's trying to show that he's grateful to us for getting him Greta and saving his life.
Yes, but how are we going to tell them apart? It's very confusing.
I will go down in the cellar and get some white paint and paint their names on their black backs. And he opened the cellar door and started down, nearly tripping when Captain Cook unexpectedly tobogganed down after him. When he came up again, Mr. Popper had a brush and a small paint can in his hands, while the penguin had a white Captain Cook on his back.
Gork, said Captain Cook, proudly showing his name to the penguin in the icebox.
Gah,
said the sitting penguin, and then, squirming around in her nest, she turned her back to Mr. Popper. So Mr. Popper sat down on the floor in front of the icebox, while Captain Cook watched, first with one eye, then with the other.
What are you going to call her? Asked Mrs. Popper.
Greta.
It's a nice name, said Mrs. Popper, and she seems like a nice bird, too.
but the two of them fill the icebox, and pretty soon there will be eggs, and the next thing you know, the icebox won't be big enough for your penguins. Besides, you haven't done a thing about how I'm going to keep the food cold.
I will, my love, promised Mr. Popper. It is already pretty cold for the middle of October, and it will soon be cold enough outside for Captain Cook and Greta.
Yes, said Mrs. Popper, but if you keep them outside the house, they might run away.
Mama, said Mr. Popper, you put your food back in the icebox tonight, and we will just keep Greta and Captain Cook in the house. Captain Cook can help me move the nest into the other room. Then I will open all the windows and leave them open, and the penguins will be comfortable.
They will be comfortable all right, said Mrs. Popper, but what about us?
We can wear our winter overcoats and hats in the house, said Mr. Popper, as he got up to go around and open all the windows.
It certainly is colder, said Mrs. Popper, sneezing.
The next few days were even colder, but the Poppers soon got used to sitting around in their overcoats. Greta and Captain Cook always occupied the chairs nearest the open windows.
One night, quite early in November, there was a blizzard, and when the Poppers got up in the morning, there were large drifts of snow all over the house.
Mrs. Popper wanted to get her broom and have Mr. Popper bring his snow shovel to clear away the drifts, but the penguins were having so much fun in the snow that Mr. Popper insisted it should be left where it was. In fact, he even went so far as to bring an old garden hose up from the basement and sprinkle all the floors that night until the water was an inch deep. By the next morning, all the Popper floors were covered with smooth ice, with snowdrifts around the edges near the open windows. Both Greta and Captain Cook were tremendously pleased with all that ice. They would go up on the snowdrift at one end of the living room and run down one behind the other onto the ice until they were running too fast to keep their balance. Then they would flop on their stomachs and toboggan across the slippery ice. This amused Bill and Janie so much that they tried it too on the stomachs of their overcoats. This in turn pleased the penguins greatly. Then Mr. Popper moved all the furniture in the living room to one side so that the penguins and the children would have plenty of room for real sliding. It was a little hard at first to move the furniture, because the feet of the chairs had frozen into the ice. Toward afternoon, the weather got warmer, and the ice began to melt.
Now, Papa, said Mrs. Popper, you really must do something. We can't go on like this.
But Captain Cook and Greta are both fat and sleek, and the children have never been so rosy.
It may be very healthy, said Mrs. Popper as she mopped up the floor, but it's very untidy.
I will do something about it tomorrow, said Mr. Popper.
Chapter 12. More Mouths to Feed.
So the next day, Mr. Popper called an engineer and had a large freezing plant installed in the cellar, and took Captain Cook and Greta down there to live. Then he had the furnace taken out and moved upstairs into the living room. It looked very odd there, but as Mrs. Popper said, it was a relief at least not to have to wear their overcoats all the time. Mr. Popper was quite worried when he found that all these changes were going to be very expensive. The refrigerating engineer was worried, too, when he found that Mr. Popper had practically no money. However, Mr. Popper promised to pay as soon as he could, and the man let him have everything on credit. It was a good thing that Mr. Popper got the penguins moved when he did, because Mrs. Popper had been right about the eggs. The rookery
had scarcely been moved to the basement when Greta laid the first egg. 3 days later, the second one appeared. Since Mr. Popper knew that penguins lay only 2 eggs a season, he was astonished when, a little later, the third egg was found under Greta. Whether the change in climate had changed the penguins' breeding habits, Mr. Popper never knew. But every third day, a new one would appear, until there were 10 in all. Now, penguin eggs are so large that the mother can sit on only 2 at a time, and this created quite a problem. Mr. Popper solved it, however, by distributing the extra eggs under hot water bottles and electric heating pads, kept just at penguin body heat. The penguin chicks, when they began to hatch, were not so handsomely marked as their mother and father. They were fuzzy, droll little creatures who grew at a tremendous rate. Captain Cook and Greta were kept very busy bringing food to them, though. Of course, the Poppers all helped, too. Mr. Popper, who had always been such a great reader, had no difficulty in thinking of names for the penguin children. They were Nelson, Columbus, Louisa, Jenny, Scott, Magellan, Adelina, Isabella, Ferdinand, and Victoria. Still, he was rather relieved that there were no more than 10 to name. Mrs. Popper, too, thought that this was about enough penguins for anybody, though they really did not make much difference to her in her housework, as long as Mr. Popper and the children remembered to close the cellar door in the kitchen. The penguins all loved to climb the stairs that led up to the kitchen and never knew when to stop unless they found the kitchen door closed. Then, of course, they would turn around and toboggan down the steps again. This made rather a curious noise sometimes when Mrs. Popper was working in the kitchen, but she got used to it, as she had got used to so many other strange things this winter. The freezing plant that Mr. Popper had got for the penguins downstairs was a large and good one. It made very large blocks of ice instead of small ice cubes, so that soon Mr. Popper had made a sort of ice castle down there for the 12 penguins to live in and climb over. Mr. Popper also dug a large hole in the cellar floor and made a swimming and diving pool for the birds. From time to time, he would throw live fish into the pool for the penguins to dive for. They found this very refreshing, because, to tell the truth, they had got a little tired of canned shrimps. The live fish were specially ordered and were brought all the way from the coast in tank cars and glass boxes to 432 Proudfoot Avenue. Unfortunately, they were quite expensive. It was nice that there were so many penguins, because when two of them, usually Nelson and Columbus, got into a fight and began to spar at each other with their flippers, the 10 other penguins would all crowd around to watch the fight and make encouraging remarks. This made a very interesting little scene. Mr. Popper also flooded a part of the cellar floor for an ice rink, and here the penguins often drilled like a sort of small army, in fantastic marching movements and parades around the ice. The penguin Louisa seemed especially fond of leading these marching drills. It was quite a sight to see them, after Mr. Popper had the idea of training Louisa to hold a small American flag in her beak while she proudly led the solemn parades. Janey and Bill would often bring their little friends home from school with them, and they would all go down and watch the penguins for hours. At night, instead of sitting and reading and smoking his pipe in the living room as he had done before, Mr. Popper would put on his overcoat and take his things downstairs. There he would sit and read with his mittens on, looking up from time to time to see what his pets were doing. He often thought about the cold, distant regions in which the little creatures really belonged. Often, too,
he thought how different his life had been before the penguins had come to keep him occupied. It was January now, and already he dreaded to think of the time when spring would come, and he would have to leave them all day and go back to painting houses. Chapter 13 Money Worries. There came a night, however, when Mrs. Popper, having put the children to bed, stopped Mr. Popper on his way to the cellar.
"Papa," she said, "I must talk to you. Come and sit down."
"Yes, my love," said Mr. Popper. "What is on your mind?"
"Papa," said Mrs. Popper, "I'm glad to see you having such a nice vacation. And I must say that it's been easier than usual to keep the place tidy, with you down in the basement all the time. But, Papa, what are we to do for money?"
"What is the trouble?" asked Mr. Popper.
"Well, of course the penguins have to eat, but have you any idea what the bills for all those live fish are? I'm sure I don't know how we're ever going to pay for them. And the engineer who put in the basement freezing plant keeps ringing the doorbell and asking for his money."
"Is our money all gone?" asked Mr. Popper quietly.
"Practically all. Of course, when it is all gone, maybe we could eat the 12 penguins for a while."
"Oh, no, Mama," said Mr. Popper. "You don't mean that."
"Well, I don't suppose I really could enjoy eating them, especially Greta and Isabella," said Mrs. Popper.
"It would break the children's hearts, too," said Mr. Popper. He sat there thoughtfully for quite a while.
"I have an idea, Mama," he said at last. "Maybe we could sell them to somebody and then we would have a little money to live on," said Mrs. Popper.
"No," said Mr. Popper, "I have a better idea. We will keep the penguins. Mama, you have heard of trained seals acting in theaters?"
"Of course I have heard of trained seals," answered Mrs. Popper. "I even saw some once. They balanced balls on the ends of their noses."
"Very well, then," said Mr. Popper. "If there can be trained dogs and trained seals, why can't there be trained penguins?"
"Perhaps you are right, Papa."
"Of course I am right. And you can help me train the penguins." The next day, they had the piano moved down into the basement at one end of the ice rink. Mrs. Popper had not played the piano since she had married Mr. Popper, but with a little practice, she soon began to remember some of the pieces she had forgotten. "What these penguins like to do most," said Mr. Popper, "is to drill like an army, to watch Nelson and Columbus get in a fight with each other, and to climb up steps and toboggan down. And so we will build our act around those tricks."
"They don't need costumes anyway," said Mrs. Popper, looking at the droll little figures. "They already have a costume."
So Mrs. Popper picked out 3 different tunes to play on the basement piano, 1 for each different kind of act. Soon the penguins knew, from hearing the music, just what they were to do. When they were supposed to parade like a lot of soldiers, Mrs. Popper played Schubert's Military March. When Nelson and Columbus were to fight each other with their flippers, Mrs. Popper played the Merry Widow Waltz. When the penguins were supposed to climb and toboggan, Janie and Bill would drag out into the middle of the ice 2 portable stepladders and a board that Mr. Popper had used when he was decorating houses. Then Mrs. Popper would play a pretty descriptive piece called By the Brook. It was cold in the cellar, of course, so that Mrs. Popper had to learn to play the piano with her gloves on. By the end of January, Mr. Popper was sure the penguins were ready to appear in any theater in the country. Chapter 14 Mr. Greenbaum. Look here, said Mr. Popper at breakfast one morning. It says here in the Morning Chronicle that Mr. Greenbaum, the owner of the Palace Theater, is in town. He's got a string of theaters all over the country, so I guess we had better go down and see him. That evening, it was Saturday the 29th of January, the Popper family and their 12 trained penguins, two of them carrying flags in their beaks, left the house to find the Palace Theater. The penguins were now so well trained that Mr. Popper decided that it was not necessary to keep them on leashes. Indeed, they walked to the bus line very nicely in the following line of march. Mr. Popper, Greta and Captain Cook, Columbus and Victoria, Mrs. Popper, Nelson and Jenny, Magellan and Adelina, Bill Popper and Janie Popper, Scott and Isabella, Ferdinand and Louisa. The bus stopped at the corner, and before the astonished driver could protest, they had all climbed on and the bus was on its way. "Do I pay half fare for the birds, or do they go free?" asked Mr. Popper.
"Janie goes half fare, but I'm 10," said Bill.
"Hush," said Mrs. Popper, as she and the children found their seats. The penguins followed in an orderly fashion.
"Say, mister," said the driver, "where do you think you're going with that exhibit?"
"Downtown," said Mr. Popper. "Here, let's call it 50 cents and let it go at that."
"To tell you the truth, I lost count when they went past me," said the driver.
"It's a trained penguin act," explained Mr. Popper.
"Are they really birds?" asked the driver.
"Oh, yes," said Mr. Popper. "I'm just taking them down to the palace to interview Mr. Greenbaum, the big theater owner."
"Well, if I hear any complaints, off they go at the next corner," said the driver.
"Fair enough," said Mr. Popper, who wanted to ask for transfers in that case, but decided to let well enough alone. The penguins were behaving very well. They were sitting quietly, two in a seat, while the other passengers looked on. "Sorry," said Mr. Popper, addressing everyone in the bus, "but I'll have to open all the windows. These are Antarctic penguins, and they're used to having it a lot colder than this." It took Mr. Popper quite a while to open the windows, which were stuck fast. When he had succeeded, there were plenty of remarks from the other passengers. Many of them began to complain to the driver, who told Mr. Popper to take his birds off the bus. He had to repeat this several times. Finally, he refused to take the bus any farther until Mr. Popper got off. By this time, however, the bus had got so far downtown that none of them minded having to get out into the street. Only a block ahead of them shone the lights of the Palace Theater.
"Hello," said the theater manager, as the Poppers and the Penguins trooped past him. "Sure, Mr. Greenbaum's here in my office. You know, I've heard about these birds of yours, but I didn't really believe it. Mr. Greenbaum, meet the Popper Penguins. I'll be leaving you. I've got to go backstage."
The penguins, now standing politely in two rows of six each, looked curiously at Mr. Greenbaum. Their 24 white-circled eyes were very solemn.
"All you people crowding around the door, go back where you belong," said Mr. Greenbaum. "This is a private conference."
Then he got up to shut the door. The Poppers sat down while Mr. Greenbaum walked up and down the double row of penguins looking them over.
"It looks like an act," he said.
"Oh, it's an act, all right," said Mr. Popper. "It's Poppers Performing Penguins, first time on any stage, direct from the South Pole." He and Mrs. Popper had thought up this name for the act.
"Couldn't we call them Poppers Pink-Toed Penguins?" asked Mr. Greenbaum.
Mr. Popper thought for a moment. "No," he said. I'm afraid we couldn't. That sounds too much like chorus girls or ballet dancers, and these birds are pretty serious. I don't think they'd like it.
All right, said Mr. Greenbaum. Show me the act.
There's music to it, said Janie. Mama plays the piano.
Is that true, madam? Asked Mr. Greenbaum.
Yes, sir, answered Mrs. Popper.
Well, there's a piano behind you, said Mr. Greenbaum. You may begin, madam. I want to see this act. If it's any good, you people have come to the right place. I've got theaters from coast to coast. But first, let's see your penguins perform. Ready, madam?
We'd better move the furniture first, said Bill.
Chapter 15 Popper's Performing Penguins. At that moment, they were interrupted by the manager, who came in with a groan.
What's the matter? Asked Mr. Greenbaum.
The Marvelous Marcos, who closed the program, haven't turned up, and the audience are demanding their money back.
What are you going to do? Asked Mr. Greenbaum.
Give it to them, I suppose. And here it is, Saturday night, the biggest night of the week. I hate to think of losing all that money.
I have an idea, said Mrs. Popper. Maybe you won't have to lose it. As long as it's the end of the program, why don't we just have the penguins rehearse in there on a real stage? We'd have more room, and I think the audience would enjoy it.
All right, said the manager. Let's try it.
So the penguins had their first rehearsal on a real stage. The manager stepped out on the stage.
Ladies and gentlemen, he said, raising his hand, with your indulgence, we are going to try out a little novelty number tonight. Owing to unforeseen circumstances, the Marvelous Marcos are unable to appear. We are going to let you see a rehearsal of the Popper Performing Penguins instead. I thank you.
In a dignified way, the Poppers and the Penguins walked out on the stage, and Mrs. Popper sat down at the piano.
Aren't you going to take off your gloves to play? Asked the manager.
Oh, no, said Mrs. Popper. I'm so used to playing with them that I'll keep them on if you don't mind.
Then she started Schubert's Military March. The penguins began to drill very nicely, wheeling and changing their formations with great precision until Mrs. Popper stopped playing in the middle of the piece. The audience clapped vigorously.
There's more to it,
explained Mrs. Popper, half to the manager and half to the audience.
Where they form in a hollow square and march in that formation. It's so late, we'll skip that tonight and jump to the second part.
You're sure you don't want to take your gloves off, madam? Asked the manager.
Mrs. Popper smilingly shook her head and began the Merry Widow Waltz. 10 of the penguins now formed in a semicircle as Nelson and Columbus in their midst put on a wild sparring contest. Their round black heads leaned far back so that they could watch each other with both round white eyes.
Gork,
said Nelson, punching Columbus in the stomach with his right flipper and then trying to push him over with his left flipper.
Gah,
said Columbus, going into a clinch and hanging his head over Nelson's shoulder as he tried to punch him in the back.
Hey, no fair, said the manager.
Columbus and Nelson broke loose as the other 10 penguins, looking on, applauded with their flippers. Columbus now sparred politely with Nelson until Nelson hit him on the eye, whereupon Columbus retreated with a loud "Ark!" The other penguins began to clap, and the audience joined them. As Mrs. Popper finished the waltz, both Nelson and Columbus stopped fighting, put down their flippers, and stood still, facing each other.
"Which bird won? Who's ahead?"
shouted the audience.
"Gork!"
said all the 10 penguins in the semicircle. This must have meant look, for Nelson turned to look at them,